Thank you to our partners over at Cavenders. Cavenders has been a trusted cowboy boot and western wear outfitter for over 50 years. Discover why their loyal customers love their collections of western wear. Check them out at cavenders.com for the latest styles. Bilfic Ford is the number one Super Duty dealer in the entire country, guys. Number one. I can't think of any truck dealer who does more for the rodeo community than Bilfic Ford. Guys, they're a family-owned and operated dealership. No bull discounts. No bull interest rates when the financing comes in. These are some of the best rates you can get. Yo, you're not in Texas? You're not in Huntsville? Well, guess what? Bilfic Ford offers nationwide shipping for all their new Super Duties. I can tell you myself, getting a new Super Duty from them, I'm pretty excited when it comes in. Talk to Bilfic Ford. Go to BilficFordHuntsville.com. That's BilficFordHuntsville.com for the best deal on a new Ford Super Duty pickup. Check them out.
This is The Gauge with host Chance Conradu.
Are you freaking serious? It's Conrado. This is The Gauge, and I am Chance Conrado. On this episode of the podcast, we have got the son of the founder of Cavenders, Clay Cavender. He is one of the people who operates Cavenders right now. He stops by real quick. Cavenders is one of our sponsors. We wanted to talk to them a little bit about the history of the store, as it is probably the largest Western store in our entire industry. So, yeah, he stopped by our mock studio we had at Globe Life. He was the first man to step foot in there, rightfully so. Check it out. All right, Clay, well, thanks for joining us. What's fun is you're the first person to step inside of our little NFR studio here at Globe Life. So it
looks great.
Yeah. I was kind of looking forward to having you guys at the actual studio, but we had a change of plans where we had to set up. And so I text you guys like, by the way, come to Globe Life instead of Fort Worth.
Oh, that's fine. I think in COVID era, you got to go with the flow.
Yeah, anyway. You kind of just go with the flow, do what you want to, or what you can do, I should say. But when we were out there, they were doing team roping practice. Had you got to see the setup here at Globe Life until this morning?
You know, really, I had plans to go to some of the baseball games, and I live in Tyler, Texas, yeah. So I've driven by it, and you know, I haven't been up to the facility, but it's pretty impressive.
It's pretty unique, and kind of knowing what we went through in this COVID year, the thought, and for somebody like you, you guys do huge things with the NFR every year,
exactly.
And have forever, so. I mean, I would kind of want to hear, and lucky for me, I don't know a lot about Cavender's history and all that. I'm really glad you're one of our sponsors, but it's been a trying year for pretty much every business. And we've been wanting to get into some of these episodes where we do more discussions with entrepreneurs and businesses, especially in the Western world, especially because starting Thursday, it's going to be 10 nights of like 50 cowboys and cowgirls for a long time. So it'll be nice to talk about something other than rodeo for a minute.
Right.
But if you could kind of, what has it been like for you guys operating with this COVID thing? I know it's like beating a dead horse talking about it, but it's really interesting to find out.
You know, it is interesting. And you know what I think we learned, or probably everybody learned, is, you know, it's not one set rule or law or regulation or, you know, for all of our stores. So we had to really react, you know, on a city by city basis. You know, some cities, you know, had limited capacity. Some we had to shut stores down completely. And some stores we did, curbside pickup type situation. But it was very trying and alarming.
Yeah.
You know, how you had to run your business.
What, 87 stores? Is that
well, right? We had 87 probably when you looked at our last, but we actually bought out three stores in the Atlanta area. So we have 89 if you want to count our website. You know,
sure.
And, you know, internally we count our website as a store. So we technically have 90 stores if you count the web. So, it's just, you know, we had to react on a store-by-store, city-by-city basis. You know, Texas was probably the easiest to operate in. Some of the other states were a little bit more difficult, but you know, we got through it and, you know, managed our labor as good as we could, and tried to maintain all the employees we could. You know, everybody, you know, had to sacrifice some, but you know, we came through it pretty good. And you know, our business actually, after the first COVID scare, I guess you could call it, it actually picked up, and we were running along really good. And you know, Black Friday, it was decent. It was not as good as years past, but we were pleasantly surprised that it was good. Yeah. So
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think anything positive is probably like a win for any business.
Right.
If you're not in the red this year, I think it's, you're pretty happy. Exactly. And I mean, there's probably a lot of other businesses, not necessarily in the Western world, but in the same marketplace as you guys who lost stores. And
oh, absolutely.
You know, I think one of your people was telling me that you guys are opening two new ones.
So, right.
I mean, that's,
yeah.
That doesn't trend with everybody else.
I guess technically we opened five new stores during, you know, this year.
One new one in Dallas.
And the acquisition we did in Atlanta, Georgia, the Horsetown company, a great family owned business. We bought them out a few months back and then opened one in Spring, Texas, kind of a Houston suburb. So we continue to grow, but we were cautiously optimistic, I guess you'd say.
Yeah. Yeah. And what was kind of the feeling for you guys when talks of the NFR going awry started? I mean, because that is a huge thing. You guys set up a gigantic booth at Cowboy Christmas every year.
Right. Well, actually, the one in Vegas, you know, we've just got our foot in the door, and they worked with us really well. We haven't had a massive booth in Vegas, actually.
Oh, really?
We've had a booth there for several years, and this is actually our biggest booth, the one here in Fort Worth.
It's like 8,300 square feet.
Yeah, and we're setting it up right now. As soon as I leave here, we get wrapped up. I'm going back over there. It's turned out really good.
Is it really?
Yeah, we're excited. It kind of be our trial run for hopefully a bigger booth in Vegas down the road.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's – I got – what is the size difference between that and where they do it in Vegas, I wonder? I mean, the Coliseum's got to be a little smaller.
Yeah, they cut it back quite a bit. Yeah. You know, a lot of people bailed out, but, you know, we actually, you know, thought it'd be a good opportunity since this is our, you know, home turf.
Yeah.
And we thought it'd be good to take advantage and do a bigger booth and kind of show, you know, Las Vegas conventions kind of what, you know, what we're about, what we can do.
Yeah.
You know, and hopefully we'll roll forward with a booth like this in Vegas. You know, I was laughing yesterday. We had some old school managers there. You know, we've had people with us for 20, 25, 30, 40 years. They're still managers or district managers. And a lot of our sales reps, like, you know, Ricky Boland's company, Resist All, you know, their sales reps were there. And I saw them in the parking lot and they were leaving. And I came in and saw some of the Justin guys and some other boot reps. They're like, oh, how big is this thing? I said, well, I said, have you been to our Palestine store or East Freeway store in Houston? I said, it's pretty much the same size. So it's
8,300 square foot.
Right. You know, our typical footprint, we like to get, you know, anywhere from 14 to 20,000 feet, you know, for our brick and mortar stores, but 8,200 is, that's a good size store. You can do a lot with it.
That's to gather that inventory. I mean, what kind of an undertaking is that? How many hands do you need to kind of do all that?
You know, it's not that difficult. You know, we're used to it. You know, we've got a pretty large, you know, buying staff that, you know, they kind of specialize in that kind of, you know, kind of thing. And so we're used to it. You know, we do Fort Worth Rodeo, Houston, San Antonio, and Vegas. So, you know, we've kind of got a routine of how we do it, but it worked out pretty well.
Yeah.
We're excited. I'm really excited about it. I hope the attendance, you know, through the COVID thing is good attendance, because I think it'll be a good learning experience for us to kind of, you know, move forward for our Vegas strategy next year.
No, absolutely. I mean, it kind of seems like this whole deal is going to go on into next year.
Yeah, I know.
Denver's canceled, Fort Worth's canceled, which was shocking. But, I mean, I'm sure it's just unfortunately probably going to follow a very similar path that it did this year.
Yeah, in Houston, I think the latest is they're going to do the stock show side of it maybe during the rodeo time. And I think there's talks. It may not be official, so don't hold me to this.
Yeah.
But I think they may actually do the rodeo in the spring.
Yeah.
So, but you know, Houston's a big deal too.
Well, I mean, gosh, that was like the big thing that happened when this all started was the way that the Houston rodeo went down. They canceled that mid rodeo.
Oh yeah, I remember my son. He was on the golf course. He plays golf for TCU, and I get a call from him like, "Dad, they're pulling us off the golf course." And they were off the golf course back in Fort Worth by 6 o'clock that afternoon, and me and my wife were traveling and he made it back to Fort Worth, loaded up all the stuff from his dorm. He was a freshman then, was back in Tyler, Texas, and school was canceled. So and then I got the call about the Houston rodeo canceling. So it was an alarming day. It's kind of, I kind of think back when 9/11 happened, it was the day that, you know, stood still, it felt like, and that was kind of very surreal experience.
I mean, it really was for the rodeo industry. It was like,
right?
Very similar to that. I mean, it wrecked a lot of people's whole year. A lot of contestants just pulled out. I mean, exactly. Rightfully so. But
it was pretty alarming.
Yeah, and you got to give the PRCA credit for being able to pull this whole deal off that they've done here. I mean,
I agree.
We were just walking around, and it's amazing how good it looks out there. Did you get a chance to go walk to the arena?
I walked around. I was waiting on you to come to the elevator. I walked around. I'm like, man, what a great facility. I mean, it's roomy. I mean, I think there's going to be, tons of suites. And
Those suites are neat. I don't know if you got to see them, but
I haven't yet.
There's not a lot of privacy in those suites.
Right.
Even we were looking at what was that media room where they do, I guess it must be one of the shows. And it's all glass. I'm just like, how do you keep the jackasses from banging on the glass or doing things during a baseball game?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting idea. But one of the fun things for me is I just don't know much about your guys' history. And you guys are just, for the Western world especially, I mean, a mega company.
Yeah.
You know, there's a few of them out there. But, I mean, for you to have 90 stores in our, kind of small subcultures, I mean, you guys are like the Waltons of radio industry.
Yeah. Well, I guess the quick history is, my father, he grew up in Oklahoma, and he moved to, Pittsburgh, Texas, which is, where we're from, which is small, super small town, East Texas. And he moved there, I believe, in 1957. And he was walking around the town and saw all the people, down on Main Street, I guess you would call it, kind of a, Norman Rockwell type, city. It's a neat little quaint town in East Texas, and he saw all the people walking around the streets, and decided to he wanted to settle down there. And little did he know, or he probably knew, but the reason why there were so many people there on the streets is Long Star Steel, which is just up the road about 10-15 miles. They were all the employees were on strike, so that's
back in the big union strike days.
Exactly. And they were wandering around, so he kind of, I guess, interpreted there's a lot of shoppers, everything, but they were actually on strike. And so him and my mom moved there, and they started started in the restaurant industry. And it was a kind of funny story. It was he bought it from a guy, and it was called the Dairy Mart with an M. Well, my dad was so darn frugal that all he did was change the logo, change the M to an H, and open it as a Dairy Heart. So anyway, if you ever meet anybody that knows my dad, he could get blood out of a turnip. So he was very frugal, very smart businessman. And, it reinvested in his business all the years. And anyway, so he did that to about 1964, 65. And 1965, he had a clothing store, Cavender's, in Pittsburgh, which, again, super small town, and really didn't carry any Western wear. It started out kind of as a men's store and carried like Johnny Carson suits back in the day, which, a lot of people don't remember that that era. But he added four styles of Tony Lama boots from a salesman, David Baker, that was kind of his cup of tea anyway.
Yeah.
He's not a city boy with suits and everything, but
he's
a businessman, so he would sell anything. But, the boots is really, they started selling really well, and so he just started adding more.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as time went on, just, we kind of went to, Texarkana, Texas, Longview, Tyler, Paris, Texas, and a lot of East Texas towns, just kind of grew from there.
Yeah, so, I mean, was that your dad's plan the whole time, is to kind of expand the business, or?
He's kind of a wing it kind of guy,
yeah.
And I don't know if that was his plan, but I think, his aspirations were always to make more money and to grow and to work hard, and that's what he did. And, and I think in 1977, he went to hire a boot company in Olathe, Kansas, so he bought like 7,500, pair of boots, and when he did that, he had to go somewhere with it. So he opened a store in Tyler, Texas, and that kind of, put him on the map, and, kind of grew from there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's such an interesting kind of story. And the era just totally different. I mean, the boots look different. Looked different. And
During the Urban Cowboy, everybody and their dog opened up a Western store, and, that didn't, that Urban Cowboy era didn't, the John Travolta, you know.
Everybody days. Did that, and then all of a sudden everybody started a Western bar with a mechanical bull.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And a punch-out machine.
You know, we actually, most people didn't survive there during that era, but we actually thrived and, you know, opened more stores, bought out some stores. But
why do you think that was exactly?
You know, I don't know. We just, you know, my dad was real frugal and was very optimistic and took advantage of, you know, opportunities to buy, you know, struggling businesses back then out, and just we kind of weathered the storm, I guess you would say, and it worked.
Yeah, it worked. Yeah, I mean, when did your dad step away from the company?
Oh gosh, when did he? I think in '94, my brother Joe, he became president. But you know,
Joe's
he never
older than you
Joe
are.
Joe Cavender, yeah. He became the president, I think, in 94. But, you know, my dad really never stepped out. He was always around. He, you know, always wanted to come check and see what's going on. But he loved to buy ranches and sell ranches, and that was kind of his cup of tea. So, you know, he did walk away, but he was very involved. But, you know, my brother Joe, he's the president of the company. My brother Mike, he's in charge of all our real estate. He buys the real estate, and then my sister Tracy, she has a commercial hunting operation there in East Texas, and does some, you know, vacation, you know, rental properties, stuff like that.
So she's the only one who's not directly involved with the
stores. So Joe's president, and Joe's still, you know, he's still super hands on with all the boot buying and all the direction in the footwear side of our company. It's all Joe and his buying team. And my brother Mike, he buys real estate, and after he buys it, you know, I pretty much build the stores from the ground up and lay them out and, you know, coordinate all the fixtures and decor and everything. And my mother, up until, you know, she passed away, you know, a year back. But my mom, she would go to every single store with me to open, you know.
Really? To do like the grand opening?
Well, no, not the grand opening, the store setup.
Yeah.
She was a super hard worker. And, you know, after all the kids were raised, she got into, you know, the decorating of the stores and worked with me doing that. And it was fun.
I bet that was just...
You know, we'd go to the stores and, you know, spend 2 or 3 days, 4 days, you know, getting them decorated and everything. So, we had a ball doing that. It was fun.
I bet.
I gave her a hard time. She'd always ask me if I liked how it looked. I'm like, well, Mom, you can't complain about free labor. So she was always free labor. So that was always
Mom. It looks just like our living room, but yeah, I guess that works.
Yeah, yeah. That was our own ongoing joke is you can't complain about free labor. So
yeah.
She was a blast to work with.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, that's something special about having a family business like that that your parents start, and not a lot of people have that opportunity to do that. And then.
Right.
You know, was it kind of you and your brother's idea to take it from maybe what it was when you guys took over to really blow it up large, or was there a pretty good base? Like I said, I don't know a lot about that.
Sure,
history.
Yeah. You know, my dad always just had a steady growth. You know, his philosophy was never borrow any money.
Yeah.
And so we're debt free. We grew when he was, you know, involved, and we've grown, you know, maybe a little bit faster, you know, since he stepped aside. But we've always grown anywhere from 3 to 6 stores a year, and that's kind of the, you know, the same path we're on right now. We're pretty methodical. You know, we're not publicly traded. We're a privately owned business, so we're not forced at all to grow, but we always have, you know, growth is in our blood. And
right.
We're pretty methodical on you know, locations and cities we pick. But you know, since we have gotten, you know, 89 stores, you know, now, you know, we've had to add, you know, a lot of people to kind of, you know, specialize. You know, me, Joe, and Mike, you know, we have our limitations on, you know, skill sets, and we've, you know, had to bring on a lot of people that have, you know, skill sets, you know, with our internet and just you know, and human resource management, you know, kind of things, and all, you know, some of the boring stuff. But you know, we got a great buying staff, planning staff. We got a lot of good people that make us look good. You got to surround yourself with good people.
Well, I think that's business 101 is get people smarter than you to do the job you don't absolutely. Know how to do. That is business 101.
But we're still, you know,
these wonderful people sitting behind us.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Joe is super hands-on in his boots, and I'm super hands-on in what I do. And
yeah.
And so is Mike. So
right. No, it's a pretty unique thing when your dad starts something, and then, I mean, they obviously, there's just four of you. You three boys and your sister?
Three boys and sister.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty large
and then
family.
We, you know, my brother Joe's got, you know, his kids are a little bit older. Joe's a little bit older than I am, and so is Mike. So Joe has kids that have entered the business. His son Drew, he's helping out too. And then McLean Cavender's involved in the business as well. So we're, you know, a lot of the grandkids are coming online now too.
Yeah. So. I mean, you guys have so much passion in the business. It just represents something good. So it's probably. Most family members probably want to be involved in it at some some aspect.
Yeah.
But you guys have been pretty active in the rodeo community. You guys sponsor a lot of really great athletes. That little video that came out about Haley was excellent.
That was pretty cool.
That was really a great thing that you guys produced there. I mean, when did that start? Like, when did Cavenders really start kind of pumping money into rodeo specifically?
Well,
and things like that.
You know, just due to the, you know, all the stores that we have in all the different cities, you know, we're always asked to sponsor, you know, different events. So we've always been involved. We've added people in our marketing, advertising, you know, and we have a girl named Jenna that is kind of does all of our rodeo type stuff. And she's done an outstanding job. She's brought in, you know, now we have the Cavender Rodeo team. So
right.
we had all these, all the kids in, you know, we had one little boy, he's a trip. And, you know, you've got young kids all the way to, you know, college kids. So we had them all, you know, all into Tyler, a couple months back. We actually just built a new home office. And we had them all in for two or three days, kind of, you know, teach them a little bit about, you know, our company and entertain them a little bit. We had a great time.
Yeah, no, it's excellent. I mean, you guys really put a lot into the industry, which is what it needs to grow. I mean, it takes forward-thinking companies like you guys and a lot of other companies that actually your partnering companies, Resist All, comes to mind.
Right.
Who do it, who, I mean, without you guys, the sport doesn't really move forward, which is something that was missing in the early days of rodeo companies just weren't prepared to invest into something like rodeo.
Yeah. And you know, you got Wrangler that, you know, of course sponsors the NFR and, you know, we got just so many companies now and there's more competition, you know, in our industry amongst the vendors. And, I think it's just motivated everybody to, you know, produce better products, more, you know, fashion forward products for the ladies and, just better product that, you know, I remember, you know, Wrangler back in the day, you know, we had 936 and 13WZ, you know, jeans, and that was a standard, you know.
Right.
Now Wrangler's expanded into so many different really cool product categories that, you know, that address, you know, different fits, different body types, different styles, and just everybody in our industry, Resist All and all the other vendors, you know, everybody's just doing a really good job and, you know, new innovative products and, It's just there's so much more to offer our customers that might not be the diehard, you know, rodeo guy that, you know, our ladies business is good. And, you know, it's just, you know, all of our vendors are doing a fantastic job. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really easy to make clothes for a rodeo cowboy because they haven't really changed much.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. An Oxford type shirt and the most boot cut pants you can possibly get.
Exactly right.
You don't really have to change it.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, Wrangler, actually, if you go to their website, they are like trying to touch into every, even like high end jeans. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Like they want to compete with Diesel or something like that. Mm-hmm. It seems like some of the price points on those jeans, which is really interesting.
And you know, for the men's side of the business, you've always had a little bit of stretch product and ladies jeans, but that's kind of, you know, probably 80% of our men's inventory now. You know, have some type of stretch performance type deal for rodeo people and, you know, your beer drinking guy that goes out on Saturday night that likes a little stretch in his jeans.
What are you saying about that guy?
Well, that guy might need a little stretch.
He might.
You know, as he goes to the bar, he might need a little more room in there after he leaves.
Yeah. Or the barbecue joint. Such a thing as beer bloating, I suppose.
Exactly.
Especially when the beers are $12 a pop.
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder what they're going to be here. Probably close to that. Ty, what are they at the baseball games? Like the cost of a single beer?
Too much.
Okay, you're supposed to have the data ready to go to the dollar. Somewhere between 12 and 14. He's tired.
I'm very limited right now. I have this single laptop. I can't really do much on it without breaking it.
Yeah, I guess Macintosh is not as great as they say.
I just don't want to try to run Chrome. You heard how the fan was of this computer running yesterday.
Yeah. But anyway, okay, away from that. Are you going to come watch the NFR? Are you going to be here all 10 days?
I'll be here a lot of, my hometown's only, Tyler's only 2 hours away. But we're coming up probably the 8th through the, through the end of it. Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to it.
It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, they did tie down practice last night, and then they're doing the team roping practice, and it's really interesting to watch the cattle and how they're using this space. I mean, that was one of the things we were talking about is what's going to happen with the stock.
Right.
So it's interesting. I don't think I've ever seen an arena so big where you see it's like the bucking chutes are usually this place you can kind of creep up into.
Yeah, and
now they're in the middle of the middle of the field.
Right.
It's like, I don't know where they're going to put the rough stock guys as far as a locker room or whatever, but they're going to have to walk like 200 yards to get to the chutes.
That makes sense.
It's pretty funny, but it'll be fun to see how it goes. You were telling me this story, and it just came back to me. Something about you were doing a fast show. You were telling Riley and I when we were walking. That was a funny story. I thought it'd be kind of fun for people to hear.
That actually was my first rodeo, I guess, if you want to say that. But I was asked years ago, golly, I was probably in my 20s, and I was asked to do a fashion show for Good Morning Texas. I'm like, sure, I'll do it. And of course, you got to get up there at 5:30 in the morning. And so we get up there, and they've got all these models, and the lady doing the show, I think it's Deborah Dungan, I think that was her name. And so I'm sitting, side by side with her, and she's wanting me to commentate. And I'm not, I'm not the greatest in front of the camera anyway. So I had to commentate, all the outfits, not to date myself, but it was kind of right when people really were getting, cell phones. And so anyway,
kind of cell phones? Because you could be talking about those ones that come with the giant satchel.
Well, I think it was right after the bag phone. Maybe it was a Razor, but people had them then, and I was just trying to do my best, and I wasn't extremely comfortable doing that in the first place. And so she asked me about this. It was a leather vest that came out. And it was on a lady, and I don't know if you've ever seen the old Indian Buffalo Nichols.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's what the actual buttons on the garment were on the vest. And so she stopped the show and just asked, she's like, she was just raving about them. And she said, well, Clay, what are those? And I said, well, those are antique nipple buttons. And, of course, I just kept rolling, and she didn't even pick up on it.
How old was this lady?
Oh, she was probably, 35, 40.
Okay, so the antique nipple thing wouldn't directly
apply to her. Oh, the model that had it. The model was,
she was in her 60s, and you say antique nipples, you kind of got slapped.
No, she was a young girl. So anyway, I knew what I said, but, the host, Deborah, she didn't even pick up on it. So, man, as soon as I got done, my phone just lit up. I got all these voicemails asking, Clay, what is an antique nipple? I'm like, oh my God. So anyway,
that was my first. How many people came up after you? He's like, hey, where can I get those antique nipples?
All my buddies, of course.
My grandmother's in need.
It was funny because it was during the footwear stock show, which coincided back then with the Dallas Apparel Mart, the big, gift show you go by, buy stuff for the store. So, I was walking around the hallways and, just people were just kind of giving me hell. It's pretty funny.
That is pretty funny.
Yeah, pretty good one.
You probably just barely started living that one.
Yeah, exactly. But that was my first.
Was the very first rodeo experience you had.
Oh, yeah. No, it was my first rodeo. When I say rodeo, it was my first rodeo on live TV.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
How many have you done since then? Or were you terrified for years?
I do maybe one every 2 or 3 years. I do a little hunting show with Majesty Outdoors. I'll do that. And that's kind of a neat deal. Actually take under. Privileged, kids have lost their, either one or both parents, to anything from drug addiction to prison to death in the military. And I'll do that. And you
localize that in Texas, or do you kind of grab?
No, Bill Belogic, he does it. They kind of go everywhere, and the theme of the show, and he might be good to do one of these too. But what he does is, he takes these kids that have lost one or both of their parents and kind of gives them their first outdoor, hunting experience or fishing. I always kind of, every year or so I'll go and do the, you know, the hunting part of it. And, you know, but the cool part about it, you know, at the end of the show, they give them a free college education. So
really,
yeah, super neat.
What age of kids, or is it just vary?
You know, I think they're probably from 16 to 8. You know, they're usually junior high school.
Yeah, so you pick kids who are kind of on their way to college.
On their way to college, yeah. They couldn't afford it, actually. Or, you know, you probably couldn't, you know, afford, you know, college education. He's a great guy.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds awesome.
So that's about all my TV experience.
Yeah.
I kind of fly under the radar a little bit, so.
It's probably better, especially exactly. If you confuse, you know, things with nipples too much.
Yeah, that exactly. That's true.
That would be troubling if you did that.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, I get it. The size, the color, I don't know.
So, yeah.
Well, I mean, we're pretty excited to have you in here. I know it's a little shabby, and I was really hoping you got to see our actual studio.
I'll come by there one day.
Yeah, no, you absolutely should. It's right there in downtown Fort Worth, but I appreciate you taking kind of the time to come on with us, and we're super happy to have Cavendish support and the rodeo. It's going to be an exciting time, and we'll swing by the booth. Are you going to be working the booth at all over there?
I'll be in and out, yeah. I'll go by probably, you over there, you know, the eighth night.
That's exciting. I don't think we're going to have an issue with people not wanting to partake in that. I mean, yeah. I just think our kind of crowd, if you will, of people is going to probably flock to that. I mean, people have been waiting for something.
I agree. So, yeah, I agree. If
you look at like the demographics who go to Vegas, it's like 50% Texans anyway.
Yeah.
So you'll probably get this entire crowd of just people who are like, I got nothing to do. Let's go check this out.
Yeah. I've had, of course, yeah, all your buddies, you know, when you're close to your hometown or whatever in Texas, hey, you got any tickets? So yeah, I think,
That's
when you have people that aren't your typical rodeo crowd asking for tickets, it kind of is an indicator that should be a good attendance. So.
I think so. Yeah, it's too bad that this is going on with such restrictions, because I bet they could have filled this place
absolutely
pretty close. I mean, I agree. With the amount of coverage that it's getting, you know, some of it bad from like the Star Telegram and things like that.
I heard that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, of course you're going to get that if you do anything, but I don't know. It's exciting. Happy to have you on the show, and this will air after the NFR.
Oh, okay. But, cool.
Yeah, there's no time to do that, but thanks for coming, and I really look forward to telling everybody, hey, just so you know, don't talk about nipples and play Cavendish, because he's going to get confused.
That's funny. Yeah, enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right. Brother,
let's go down. This has been The Gauge, hosted by me, Chance Conrado, produced and edited by our guy, Ty Yeager. Shout out to the executive producers, Dustin Pointer and Cody Denton. Marketing and content produced by Riley Chone. Our theme song is by Shay Ashshire and the Night Howlers. Make sure to rate and review this podcast, as well as follow The Gauge on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And make sure to subscribe to The Gauge wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you guys next time.